So, as mentioned, the title of this talk is Infection Proximity, a Novel Infection-Specific Network Centrality Measure. This work was done in collaboration with Nina Pfefferman at the Center for Discrete Mathematics and Theoretical Computer Science at Rutgers University. She's also in the Department of Ecology, Evolution, and Natural Resources. I have nothing to disclose. So the motivation and background for this presentation and this research is that social network analysis has had some really important insights for infectious disease epidemiology, especially the study of sexually transmitted diseases. You get a lot of interesting things that are very hard to get at when you look at kind of overall population studies. You can see things like core groups, that a very small number of individuals are capable of sustaining an epidemic, bridges between high-risk populations and low-risk populations, the importance of partner concurrency, things like that. The goal is to really extend these tools past sexually transmitted disease research into kind of infectious disease epidemiology as a whole, to look at other high contact populations, schools, workplaces. My particular interest is hospitals, and then to get some improved exposure measurements so you can start kind of looking at someone's contact network in the context of an observational epidemiology study. So some quick definitions when we go through this. When I say a network, that means a collection of individuals and the relationships between them. These may be based on social contacts, so friends, neighbors, families, things like that, sexual relationships, or other factors. And when we talk about centrality, which, since infection proximity is a novel centrality measure, is something we're going to talk about, these are all measures of subject I's position in a network, so essentially who you are in the context of the people around you. There's a couple of these we'll be looking at. There's degree, which is simply how many other individuals connect to you. So if you have two friends, your degree is two. Something called betweenness, which is how many shortest paths between individuals go through a particular individual eye. If you were attempting to spread gossip over a network, this would be the person you'd try to get in contact with. Closeness, which is how many contacts away is I from all other individuals. So essentially, how many people do you have to go to get from any other part in the network to you? And then what's known as eigenvalue centrality, which is the connections from I to a popular node are better than connections to I from an unpopular node. If you've ever used Google, this is what you're taking advantage of. And had you invented this, you would now be worth billions. So some current issues in kind of the use of social networks and centrality measures. If you look at egocentric networks, which are networks based solely on a person, you are an individual, you ask them just about what they know about the people around them, you don't really get at the whole network, and you fail to quantify a lot of those risks. And then all the centrality measures I just talked about are what I call infection agnostic measures. They talk about your position in the network. It doesn't necessarily talk about your position in the network with regards to infectious disease. So some examples of this, if you look at egocentric networks, if you ask someone partner concurrency, how many people does your partner also sleep with? These two networks, this diamond, who's the person you're interviewing, they'd say the same thing. My partner sleeps with one other partner. For anyone who's done sexually transmitted disease research, these two sexual contact networks have kind of a different risk profile to them. So despite the fact that you get that same answer, these are not equal networks. Similarly, for degree, which is just, so how many partners do you have, how many social contacts do you have, each of these three people has the same degree measure, and those are clearly not the same network in terms of disease risk. So there's many, many examples for infection agnostic measures that have kind of the same core problem. These two people have identical positions in identical networks. This person has a fully uninfected network. This person has a network where the prevalence of disease is about 50%. Clearly, these people have very, very different risk profiles for disease, but they'd have kind of the same exposure looking at an infection agnostic centrality measure. So the solution to this that we've come up with is what's called infection proximity. It's a, quote, infection-aware centrality measure. And what it does is it expressly measures your risk of infection based on the members of your network. And one of the things we kind of designed this with is the idea that you could use this in an observational study, either as an exposure measurement if you were specifically interested in kind of social network epidemiology, or potentially as something like a covariate in a multivariable model if you wanted to control for someone's connectedness to other people when you're looking at another exposure. This is the math behind it. I'm going to skip over this. I imagine everyone in the room is okay with that. So what this means in English is it's related to that closeness measurement I mentioned. And what it does is it takes how many steps is subject I from the nearest infected person or persons in their network on the most direct viable path. So it essentially says, what's the path of least resistance from you to an infected person? We raise that by the probability of transmission to kind of scale based on the transmissibility of the disease. And then this is in turn also scaled by network size so that you can take a small network, a large network, and you don't have utterly uncomparable measures. This is only calculated for subjects at risk of the outcome. So it's only calculated for people who are, for example, uninfected. If you already have the infection, we're not terribly interested in your risk of infection. That ship has sailed. And people who are unvaccinated. Additionally, the paths we calculate cannot go through people who are not at risk for the infection. So, for example, your path cannot go through a vaccinated person. We assume the chain of transmission stops there. So there's some kind of additional assumptions that go into this. One of them is that all network connections are concurrent. So when you look at that network, that means everyone is connected to everyone else at all times. This can be addressed if you're using an observational study by using smaller sample interviews and using this as a time-varying exposure measurement. So rather than saying, well, everyone's social network is static, you can say, at month one, here is the network, and here is your infection proximity score. At month two, here's your slightly different network, et cetera, et cetera. We're developing networks to methods to handle truly continuous dynamic networks. These are much, much more complex and are less directly applicable to observational studies, since typically observational studies don't tend to measure things in continuous time. Infection comes from the most direct route. Again, we kind of assumed that path of least resistance. We think that's a fairly reasonable assumption since it is scaled by infection proximity, so even kind of the next closest path is exponentially less likely to be infected, and that connections are undirected. So if you're talking about influenza, that's, you know, you can infect your friend just as well as your friend can infect you. This is not necessarily true for sexual contact networks, but we're going to assume it is in a bit. So in terms of qualitative comparisons, the two networks on top, despite their very different shapes, are identical. There's no infection on those networks. Therefore, there's no risk of infection from those networks. And in the bottom, this network has, so this subject in this network has less risks than this person, who in turn has less risk than this person. And all of these people have substantially less risk than this person, because essentially that infection has to go through several different infective steps instead of just one hop. So how we decided to kind of analyze this once we came up with the idea to find out if it's actually worth anything is using some Monte Carlo simulation methods. So we took two networks. I'm going to talk about both of them today. One is a HIV transmission cluster in a group of men who have sex with men in South Wales, and the other is a high school social contact network. Essentially, we assumed that these were the complete social networks that we were seeing. We simulated a disease outbreak on these networks 10,000 times. So essentially now we can measure, okay, so we had this idea of your exposure, how many times do you actually get the outcome? And then we compared this to some of the other infection agnostic centrality measures. And the advantage of this method is we can actually analyze it as kind of a quasi-cohort study. So for the HIV transmission simulation we took from the study, this is a very high prevalence environment. That's the contact network. The red diamonds are infected individuals. That's about a 21% prevalence. We assumed a per ACT transmission probability of about 1.5%. We borrowed that from a meta-analysis by Rebecca Bagley. And so from the results of this, infection proximity is a not significant predictor of your infection risk, but does actually predict that you have a higher risk of infection. And everyone else kind of assumes a pretty low baseline risk, with the exception of degree, which has at least a very precise, if somewhat small, estimate. So this was encouraging, but somewhat disappointing, because, you know, statistical significance is something people like. But again, this was not kind of powered for that. So we also then looked at this school network, which what we assumed was five initially infected students. They'd picked up influenza from somewhere else and then come to school despite I presume the school nurse's wishes to the contrary. We assumed a per-act transmission probability of about 10% and an infectious period of 7 days. So again, we're roughly trying to model influenza. The results of this are considerably more encouraging. So infection proximity in this network is a statistically significant predictor of risk. It's actually the strongest predictor of risk. Degree proves a pretty decent kind of surrogate. Closeness and betweenness struggle somewhat, and eigenvalue centrality explodes entirely. And one of the things we did here is to normalize this, since many of these are kind of very small numbers or very large numbers. What these actually are is the hazard ratio of you going from the bottom fifth percentile of your score to the top 95th. So instead of saying a one-unit measurement, which many of these end up with odds ratios of like 10,000, they're kind of normalized. So again, we see a pretty strong means of predicting infection on this. So in the conclusions, infection proximity is the most strong predictor in all of these simulations, and it does have manageable precision. It's got pretty good power to look at things statistically. It's superior to closeness by quite a bit, despite the fact that they're kind of based on each other. And what this really, the takeaway of this is that infection awareness matters, that you can't just look at someone's contact network without looking at the disease actually on that network. In some circumstances, it turns out degree, which is a considerably easier measure to calculate, may actually prove an adequate measure of risk. This is especially true in high prevalence settings, where essentially the number of incoming possible infections is really what matters, rather than kind of infections trickling across networks, and for extremely connected networks. However, at some point when you get to really, really highly connected networks, you should probably be just using an SIR model instead. So the future directions that we'd like to take this in, the big one for us is computational speed. This is currently what I call long. It used to be very, very long. The sexual contact network runs extremely fast. The speed is based on how many loops you have in your network. So the school network takes long enough for me to go get lunch. Larger networks take kind of longer. And additionally, lower prevalence means longer runtime because, again, since we don't trace contacts through infected nodes, the more infection you have, kind of the shorter links you have and the less you have to calculate. We'd like to kind of continue to do some sensitivity analysis looking at different network structures, both kind of empirical and theoretical, to see if there are places where this breaks entirely, if there's places where it works really well, if there's places where there's some alternatives that can be considered, and then looking at, for the observational context, what's the effect of sampling error and things like that. Also looking at directed networks, so, you know, you're friends with B, but B is not particularly friends with you, and then the public release of the software so this can actually be used by people besides us. So again, this was done in collaboration with Dr. Pfefferman at Rutgers University. My contact information, eric.lofgren@unc.edu. If you happen to have a contact network and want math done on it, I am more than happy to do that. And that's it. Thank you very much.